Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Tuesday. I have just returned from Chicago. This is Dr. Cheryl Lentz, known as the Academic Entrepreneur, and welcome to every Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, to 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio. It is a wonderful opportunity in morning that I sat on a plane last night trying to look at some of the lessons I had learned from my high school reunion. Yes, it was 30 years. Wheeling High School, Illinois, right outside of Chicago, northwest suburbs. And it was amazing to be able to see what happened to everyone. And it seemed to be two kinds of folks, those who were just those who were very happy with everything that they did, and everything to them was a gift. Everything was an opportunity, an excitement, a positive kind of a thing. And when they were telling their stories, it was just amazing to see they had done so well and had such a happy life despite all the adversity. And then there were those that had the unhappy stories. Everything was a trauma. Everything was a crisis. Everything was a victim type of mentality. And it was kind of sad. And I hadn't been to the first two reunions. So, again, this was 30 years since I had seen many of these people. Now, the interesting thing is with Facebook, many of them were easy to recognize me. I was very visible, and it was kind of interesting. There were a few that I apologize to those who might be listening that I didn't recognize. One in particular, she's like, Cheryl, you're going to kick yourself the minute you figure out who I am. And the minute she was being kind of a smart aleck, I'm like, you're exactly who she was. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, she had changed so much, and she's grown up so beautifully. Really amazing. But it was so hard because, you know, you're only there for a few hours, and it was like being at a wedding. You have about 5 minutes with everybody, and I certainly didn't get around to everyone in there because there were just certain people that you were friends with and your groups and cliques in high school and we wanted to chat with. So it led me to my topic today of looking at, is feedback a gift or is feedback a criticism? Do we accept when people offer us going, well, gosh, you know, this is amazing in there, but you could have done that better, or we could have looked at this a little bit differently? And many people take it immediately as a judgment, as a, oh, my gosh, you're judging me. And I know many of my students are like that, and many of my clients are like that as well. And so I try very hard to be able to, you know what, we need to separate ourselves, the person, absolutely wonderful, absolutely exciting. People adore us or they don't, and either way, we have to be comfortable with who we are. We have to stand in our accountability of this is our life, this is what's happened, and we are responsible for it. Some things have gone amazingly well in my life. Other things, not so much. But the idea is the shift that I had probably in my doctoral program where I had to separate Cheryl the person from Cheryl the writer, Cheryl the student, Cheryl the family member, Cheryl the spouse, Cheryl the friend. Everywhere those roles has a little different. And if we just kind of keep on that, oh my gosh, that we failed. And we've talked about failure extensively here on this radio show. And so today the idea is looking at how do we look at what people say to us? How do we look at the response? There were a few people when talking with the reunion that I was asking questions simply to get a better idea of their story. And they got a little defensive, as if they had to justify stuff. And that wasn't my goal in asking questions. It was just I want to find out more. This is exciting. And tell me about your kids and tell me about their accomplishments. And some of them had kids who were still struggling, but there was no judgment. I remember one in particular. He's like, yeah, he's kind of on the 5-year plan. And he goes, sometimes college isn't for everyone. But the parents weren't upset. The parents were simply looking at this as a unique opportunity that was their child. They didn't love them any less. This was just going to be their way around the mulberry bush. So again, it was a gift. Everything that happened was this is simply our journey. And others were a very judgmental, oh my gosh, my kid won't do this. My kid didn't do this. He hasn't done that. She hasn't done this. And it was like, wow, you know. So it really led me to the conclusion, how do we look at feedback? And I was one of those, particularly in high school, I was valedictorian. I drove myself and others crazy because I was this perfectionistic, had to get the A. And I really wonder where that came from. There's been some theories along the way, but it's taken me decades to overcome some of that. And to see the pride in many of my colleagues that I went to high school with, one in particular came to me and she said, Cheryl, I just have to tell you, I am so proud of what you did. And I always knew you would. Just phrase of a, wow. I was really concerned personally, myself as well, that I might disappoint some people. I'm not sure what they expected, but there are certain labels you get in high school, right? I was in the marching band. I was valedictorian. I had a bit rigid. I wasn't sports related. Probably could have had more fun had I hit the books a little bit less and not been so intense and so perfectionistic oriented. And when I got to the end of my high school journey, I remember being interviewed by, oh, I don't know, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Chicago Tribune, I have it somewhere in an album, that it was a, wow, you know what, now that I'm at the end, now that I'm at the other side, now I'm the high school graduate with college ahead of me, I was very humbled thinking, you know what, maybe having had more fun, maybe having had more balance. I wasn't one of the smartest valedictorians. There is a colleague of mine, the man was just brilliant, but he was brilliant and didn't have to work at it. I hired tutors, I worked with friends, I hit the books. I mean, to me, it was just I wasn't good at this stuff. I was simply tenacious and persistent, and I had a goal. I wanted that perfect element. And now I look back going, oh, man, perfection is simply not realistic. And it was such a difficult thing. I mean, what did I do? Drove my friends crazy. I got myself an ulcer. I had medical issues. And it was just not the balance. And you know what? B is above average. I remember oh my gosh, this is so funny. I remember the first F I ever earned. It was in calculus my senior year, and I just wasn't good at certain areas of calculus. I mean, if it weren't for partial credit, oh my gosh, I would have never got through this. And Mr. Smith was a calc teacher, and he was absolutely amazing. He goes, Cheryl, your calculus is just fine. You get too nervous and you hang on too tight, and your little things get in there. And he always used to quiz me, Cheryl, how much is 2 plus 2? Because whatever it is I would get so hung up in the calculus that my simple arithmetic, 2 plus 2 often equals 5, and that one little error screwed up the entire rest of the answer, that if it weren't for, again, partial credit, and I showed all my work and how I got there, hence my students listening to this know why I became the teacher that I did, because the answer of 4 is not helpful to learning. I needed to know how I got to 4. And so when I got to this humongous answer, everybody in class got to the point going, what did you get, Cheryl, 3 pages later? Is that my calculus would be fine, but because I would make a mistake 1 or 2 lines into it because I was so nervous about the calculus, my fundamentals went to hell. And so that little error in the beginning made for these amusingly long, frustratingly long, oh my gosh, Cheryl, the answer was not this long, humongous thing, because I made the mistakes early. And it's so funny now, even when I balance my checkbook, I often make mistakes in the first 1 or 2 computations after I balance my checkbook to come up with these horrific, oh my gosh, you're off. I think my checkbook's off by 8 cents right now, and it's just that's just the first couple of things that it's even though I use a calculator because I don't trust myself sometimes, there's still, I wrote something wrong, I configured something wrong, I hit the wrong buttons, and again, how is the derived answer? And so it goes back to, feedback wasn't a gift. It really was a criticism. And I was so hard on myself. And others were, Cheryl, it's not a big deal. I mean, I remember Willie coming into class, and he would just kind of sit there. He was brilliant. It was natural. He hardly had to do the homework. And he was like, and I'm convinced it was a more relaxed hand on the throttle. I took it personally. I took it as if I couldn't get the right answer, I was a failure. And earning that first F, that's what made the refrigerator in my house, right? I get perfect A's. I was salutatorian in junior high, valedictorian in high school, never got less than an A for final grade, but that F in calculus was a, oh my God, you don't get it. And it's not fatal. And my first year in college, we've talked about as well, wasn't exactly stellar as well. And because I had to learn failure, and I had to learn that failure just is. It's not a reflection of who I am personally. I'm wonderful. People love me. I have brilliant friends all over the world. But until I had to have that attitude shift, I had to realize, you know, the fear is the only option. Feel the fear and do it anyway. The Winston Churchills, the Roosevelts, I'm still afraid of change sometimes. I'm still afraid of failure, but I do it anyway. And the whole point is the ability to realize that failure is part of success. Criticism is part of somebody caring enough to offer you some type of input that could make things better. Some people take that input as judgment. Some people take that input as, oh my gosh, thanks for caring enough to wrap that gift and give it to me because it might prevent me from something more tragic in the future. You know, think about the people who tell you what you need to hear versus what you may want to hear. It's not always easy to hear feedback. It's not easy to hear you screwed up. There were some interesting stories that came up going, yep, I got to believe I wasn't where I am today 30 years ago in high school. And you're awkward, and I'm not sure I'd go through high school again. College, absolutely. In high school, I don't think so. And we hung around. I was in the band in the orchestra, all that stuff. And so at the reunion, most of us found each other who were in the band just because I wasn't really mainstream as well. You know, I would see the kids in my neighborhood, of which my parents were the only ones still left. And so we hung around each other because of proximity. You know, we'd see each other in the neighborhood. We'd go trick-or-treating. We'd go to prom together. It was because we would be on the bus. We were at the same church. We were in the same neighborhood. But when I was in school, I was in the band, and that was really my identity. And some people had some videos of the marching band and some of the things I had. It's just so funny to look back on it, to where everyone ended up. And it's in our control. It's a, what did you want out of life? I want something amazing. I look at some of the things that I did when I was home just this past week, and it was, despite being sick one of those nights, I mean, I had family obligations. There was actually someone who had passed on, and we had a wake and in the funeral, and I got to see a lot of relatives I wouldn't have normally seen, but it was the target of opportunity. I just happened to be home. The people that I went to school with, the people that, some of them actually crashed our reunion because some had married people from our class who were in the band from other classes, and it was great to see them. Others, it was fabulous. They crashed our reunion because they were a couple classes ahead of us, and it was fantastic to see them. Because, you know, when you're in high school, it's not just you hanging around with your class, freshman, you know, sophomore, junior, senior. You hung around with everybody in the school, and you'd see them at lunch, you'd see them in band, you'd see them in drama, you'd see them in all kinds of other things. You'd see them on the bus. You'd have your own lives with the church and where you lived. And to see how everybody turned out and what their lives, it was interesting. For me, there was a bit of sadness because I'm not a mom. I'm a stepmom, and I don't have much contact with my stepdaughter by her choice. But it was a very different environment when they were all talking about their kids and their amazing things. But what was interesting is her daughter is going to college, and one of my recent graduates, although 3 years ago, is going to be her teacher. And I thought, how interesting that now my students, my graduates, are teaching my friends' kids at college. And I just kind of going, well, isn't that an interesting kettle of fish? And we were all looking at where people ended up. I'd say about 75% of the class stayed local. I might have been one of the furthest because obviously I'm here in Albuquerque and this was in Chicago. But it was just amazing to see some of those that no matter what happened to them, they had a smile on their face the whole time. And for them, every adversity, every criticism, everything was just another bump in the road, another needed element to shape who they are and how they appear. And others haven't quite had that same attitude. And I'm convinced that whatever happened to you is really your accountability and a reflection of a lot of your personality and a lot of how you look at the world. You know, are we a glass half empty? Are we a glass half full? And I guess I'm looking at the however long I'm going to be here, I want to have experiences in life. I want to be able to look at things and do amazing things in my life and have experiences. And some things have worked out phenomenally. Others, not so much. But even the not so much helped shape what has happened since then. And hopefully you've had critical thinking classes and philosophy classes that have talked to you about the idea of inculturation, acculturation. How we were raised by our parents was our first experience with leadership. And so if we had a positive experience, many of us will go through life having a very positive experience despite what happens to us or in spite of what happens. Others struggle. Others will look at, oh my gosh, it's just a horrible world. I'm so afraid of it. Everybody is bad out there. Everything that happens to me is not my fault. It's such a dramatic victim mentality. And then we reap what we sow. And sometimes we get it right in our opinions, and other times we don't. But it's what we do with the failures. It's not important that we fail necessarily. It's what have you done as a result of that? Okay, so your life didn't turn out exactly how you had planned. Mine happened. And there were a lot of, oh my gosh, wouldn't it have been interesting had I been able to have children? And I couldn't. And even having a stepdaughter wasn't exactly the ideal experience and substitution I had hoped for. But you have the ability to do the best you can with what you have and move forward. And so I look at this going, great, so now I'm a college professor. I have over 20 doctoral graduates, and many of them have turned out to be kids in the sense that I have been their mentor and that I have had the privilege of having to shape them, mold them, address them in ways to be able to help move them forward, particularly when they get stuck, particularly when they have their emotional moments, particularly during the doctoral program. But whether undergrad, master's, certifications, or people just find me and I have done consulting with them. Or I go to seminars and conferences and you meet folks that you're supposed to meet, or even on airplanes. I met the most amazing person on the airplane that when I was coming out, and I sure hope she contacts me because it was we were both military wives. We bonded instantly. We were on the plane for about, gosh darn near, 2.5 hours. And I don't remember the lengthy plane ride because we were chatting the whole time. But she had some adversity in her life, that she was amazingly positive, amazingly hopeful, despite all kinds of things with breast cancer and deaths in the family and accidents and all kinds of stuff. And I'd like to be considered now the ability to do that because most people, you know, look at a lot of the things that I did and don't understand sometimes the motivation. I had a lot of setbacks. I had to learn through failure. My first year of college was a complete disaster. I've had some other not-so-stellar times in my life, but the fact is I picked myself up, I dusted myself off, and I started all over again, sometimes kicking and screaming, sometimes finding mentors, particularly my doctoral mentor, who would pat me on my head going, Cheryl, really? Is this really how you want to behave? Is this really necessary to have all this drama? And eventually I learned, going, you know what? You can be home and be miserable. You can go out and be miserable. You can do your job and change your attitude. Because people want to be around happy people. The people I gravitated to at the high school reunion were those who had positive stories, not necessarily happy endings. People who embraced everything that happened to them as a teachable moment, as a magical experience, and I envy them for their attitude. Because I haven't been so stellar sometimes, and I have sometimes seen feedback as anything but a gift. I remember some of the things, particularly in my own doctoral journey, where I cried, and I'm not embarrassed to say that it was it took the legs right out from under me. Because it was what I heard was you suck. What I heard was, you are anything but perfect. You couldn't get it right, and I would have pages and pages and hundreds of comments and the perpetual editing going, again, my reality was, you suck. And no, it wasn't. Eventually, it was no, it's a gift. It's you're doing okay, but we're going to make you better. We've been there. You haven't. That's why following in the footsteps of someone who's done what you've done already and doing what they do and following them shortens your learning curve, helps with your attitude. And that's why to this day I still have mentors. I still have business coaches, personal friends, board of directors, soul sisters, if you will. Everyone that comes into your path is a gift. But it's how you respond to it, take it. You could back off. You could be defensive. You could say, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. Or you could go, wow, I never thought of it that way. Or isn't that an amazing thing? Or, yeah, you know, I kind of missed the mark there. Or not exactly how I'd hope to behave. We're talking about the crises in my leadership class I'm teaching right now. And many of us don't exactly know how we'll behave when we're faced with a specific situation, be it a crisis, a tragedy, a natural disaster, a death in the family, a situation in the family, in friends, in businesses, community space. I mean, I remember hearing some stories of, you know, people who used to hang together in high school, somewhere along the line had a falling out, and they don't talk to each other anymore. I have much of that with my siblings. We've had falling outs. We were doing fine as kids. When we got older, we had very different opinions, and we couldn't reconcile them. And I always am very clear to share my opinions with my students to let them know I am not a hypocrite. For whatever reason, I can do a lot of what I offer my students in terms of mentoring, advice, counsel in particular, which is very important to know the distinction. Yet, I can't do it with my own family. Some rifts I've been able to heal, some not so much. And what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. We can only be in control of our behavior, our reaction. We cannot be in control of others, be it our family, our siblings, our employees, our followers, our kids, our stepkids, whomever. We can merely control our response. And that's what I've really been working on is you are entitled to live your own life. We are entitled to our choices, but we are accountable for those choices. And so if I'm not terribly into what it is you are and I can't understand your behavior and I don't agree with it, I don't condone it, we may have to part and agree to disagree. I have friends of, what's the longest one I have? 47 years, because I'm 48 years old. And she and I talk almost every other week. 48 years is a big commitment and investment for someone. Sometimes we can go months or years without talking, others every other week. People that I was at the reunion with, there were friends that we picked up as if that time had not passed. Others, great to see you, glad things turned out, just not someone we're going to continue the journey with. It was nice to hear about them. They participated in a piece of our past. Now it's time to move on, and I wish them well. So we have choices, and we have to be careful not to confuse choices with obligations. I know a lot of students will believe, well, I have to do that with so-and-so because they're family. Well, in my opinion, that's not justification for abuse. That's not justification for being around people that you just can't stand, because they don't meet your personality, the way they live through life. Particularly, I am not someone who micromanages. I am really learning to leave the drama behind. I don't like trauma. I don't like to be around people who don't have the same sense of values and the rest of it. And the goal is like, you know what? This isn't judgment. This is observation. You have your world. It just doesn't meet with mine. So good luck on your path. Good luck on your journey. I wish you well, but this isn't part of my journey that I want to go forward with you. Obligation, family, notwithstanding. And so there are so many millions of people that are in the world, and we get to choose, family or otherwise, whether we want to have them on our island to be part of our journey. And there are some that people are, well, I have to be friends with you because you're my sibling, you're my aunt, you're my uncle, you're my insert, whatever that familial tie is. I don't tend to agree with that. I don't think it's necessary to have miserable existence, particularly around the holidays. Oh, the story's something. And I always wonder, well, why do you put yourself through this? Why do you have to have a horrible Thanksgiving or a horrible Christmas every single year? And they look at me going, but isn't that my job? It's like, it's your job if you choose it to be. It isn't something that's necessarily a requirement, and it's not always going to be favorable. But it's, again, looking at things, is feedback a gift? Is your family a gift? Is it a chain around your neck? Is it a criticism? Why do you have to spend your life miserable, surrounded by people you don't like, don't want to be around, simply because there's an obligation? I don't find that to be acceptable. I am choosing to go forward with people that make me happy, that bring me joy, that find honor and joy in my company. And if you don't, then that's fine. I can't say that I'm going to be everything to everybody. I'm certainly not perfect. Don't intend to be. Don't claim to be. And here are the people that I choose to be around. And so again, let's really dig deep this week. Remember, our radio show is really about thought-provoking radio of thoughts. That's how you accept feedback. And again, whether it's family criticism, or family, friends, employees, colleagues, bosses, let me invite you to try and turn the tables and simply say thank you to consider it as a gift. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to accept it. But you do have to be aware of it, because perception is reality. And if you are struggling with your life and you're wondering why everything is so difficult and why people are so abrasive or have a pattern of behavior about you, then maybe you really have to look internal. We are magnets in our personality. We attract those from which we put out there. You reap what you sow. If you are a negative person, then coincidentally, you're going to have negativity around you. If you are a positive person, then the universe is going to put positive people around you. And I've seen a huge shift in the last few years when I've made that shift. If you're listening to my radio spot on Angie Daybreak every 2 weeks, we're looking at the Napoleon Hill success through a positive mental attitude. You can go through life negative and crabby and always complaining and whining, and everything bad happens to you, and you're just going to get more of the same. So the question is, do you want that life? Do you want to be that magnet? If not, change it. And surround yourself with people who are positive, who are joyous, who are uplifting, who contribute things to your life, not suck the life and the energy right out of you. We are the product of the five people we hang around the most, the five books that we read about. So look at the people you hang with, family or otherwise. Look at the people at work you hang with. Is that really who you are? We're doing a DISC assessment in many of my classes. It's always amazing that some of my students are very surprised because of how they see themselves is very different than how others see them. And this is the concept of praxis. How close to how you see yourself do you get to how others see you? And that's why a lot of universities and businesses use a balanced scorecard with multiple raters. Not just having one boss rate you, but to have people above you, laterally, near you, and above you to get that complete holistic wow. And I've had those surprises of, I thought I did a darn good job, and they're like, you know what, Cheryl, sometimes, but in this case, not so much. And it was a take a big gulp of air, swallow, and be open to the gift I was about to receive. And it shaped me in going, wow, I guess I missed the signs. I guess how we see ourselves is not always how others see us. And so I look at the others and how they see me, and I look at, do I value their opinion? Do I value their insight? Do I value the gifts they might give me? And if I do, I embrace them, even though it may be hard to hear. And if I don't agree, then I may just simply say, thank you for sharing. I appreciate the gift. And maybe at another point it might be valuable, but we always have to look at who is giving the gift and how their perspective is as well. Again, remember, inculturation, acculturation. We are a complete product of everything that's happened to us, good and bad, up to this point in time. So let me invite this consideration. Every week our goal is to give you something that makes you go, something that's going to improve your life, something that's going to give you an idea of, do you like where you are, and you are responsible for what you have attracted or not into your life. And you're going to have to decide, if you don't like your life the way it is, then change it. And these are some techniques. And one way of changing it is look at your perspective, look at your attitude, and look at the fact that, is feedback a gift or is it criticism? That one little point of how you perceive it could really be a shift you're looking for. And how we see life is how what has happened to us in our life perceives. It's really that. So thank you for joining us today. Again, my name is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. I am known as the academic entrepreneur. I am a refractive thinker, and we will be having a new book that's going to be coming out here in very short order. Please look at www.refractivethinker.com. Look at drcheryllentz.com if you'd like to see a little bit more of my background. And just wanted to say thank you for joining us, and good luck in your reflections and your consideration going forward. And remember, think your way to success. I look forward to seeing you next Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., for another thought-provoking edition of Refractive Thinker Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy your week. Bye now.